It's because we don't have air conditioning that cools off in the office quick. The new building, you don't know these things. And I'm like, it's like 80 degrees in here. So I'm trying.
Hey, welcome to Gospel Nobodies. This is a podcast to encourage faithful and joyful planting of churches in obscure places for the fame of Jesus, that the lives of people and communities would be changed. My name is David Pinckney, and it's my privilege to be the rural strategist for Acts 29's Church in Hard Places, also the pastor of River of Grace Church in Concord, New Hampshire. And tomorrow, the day after this recording, my wife, Sharon, and I will celebrate 33 years of marriage. Anyway, I'm up here in Concord, New Hampshire, and it's my privilege to be joined by two guys today. First of all, Zach Mason is the pastor of the Grove Church in Spruce Pine, North Carolina.
So close.
One of these days. And he's gonna start joining me as a co-host. He's got some background in this stuff, and I need some help because I'm getting older. But anyway, glad you're with us, Zach. And today our special guest is Kyle Black. Kyle and I met back in the fall of 2019. Kyle planted and pastors Watershed Church in Copperas Cove, Texas. Married to Lindsay, and glad you're with us. Kyle, thank you for joining us.
Oh yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, well, I just since I've met you, I so appreciate your just who you are. Your humble, generous, gregarious, stick-to-itiveness. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little about your church. Tell us a little bit about how you pay your bills, because that's going to be part of our discussion today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we planted, like you said, in Copperas Cove in 2013, my wife and Lindsay, which we just celebrated 19 years to 2 days ago. And so we have two children, Keaton and Kelby, about to be 13 and 15. So I'm about to have two teenagers officially in the house. But I grew up in West Texas, right outside Lubbock. So West Texas for Texans is not El Paso. It's the panhandle, west part of the panhandle. But I grew up there and then moved to Central Texas when I graduated college with a teaching degree. And so I was a full-time teacher and coach, and have been teaching and coaching for the last 17 years. So that's how I pay my bills, is a full-time teacher, which I use teacher loosely now because I teach PE. So really it's glorified playing with some structure that I get to provide. But so I've done that for the last, I guess, finished 17 years with the same school district. And so we planted in 13. So in October of this year, Watershed will celebrate its eighth year birthday.
What led a PE teacher to plant a church?
Oh man. Well, I was actually in college. I had my typical mess around, waste time, teenage years, late teenage, early 20 years. And then I was in college and just needed to get out of college quicker. And so I was going to go religious studies and all that. And my wife actually steered me towards education just because pastorate and her, she didn't ever see herself marrying a pastor. So she kind of lovingly steered me another way. So that's how the teaching happened. And then I just always kind of gravitated towards teaching in our local church. Ended up being an interim youth pastor that turned into 4 years. And it was in that time where we started hosting a small group in some sense, it was arrogance of we can do it better. In some sense, it was a desire that there should be something else. And so our counties, like you'll remember, the towns are kind of spread out with our school district. And so on the east side of the county is just a bunch of people stuck out in the hills in different neighborhoods. And so we wanted to plant. We felt called to plant out there in that neighborhood, not just to be in the community, but just kind of the area. And so that's where that led. So we're in Copperas Cove. We're between Cove and Kempner. It's another little bitty town. And so really it was just that calling of, man, people will drive for school to Lampasas, which is the other town on the other side of the county, but they won't come for church. They won't come for anything else because life draws them the other direction down the highway. And so it was really a let's plant kind of in the middle of that and be established for those people. And so it was kind of born out of all those ideas and just felt called.
What's the population of Coppers Cove?
Coppers Cove, I haven't looked at since the new census came out. It's around 30,000-40,000 right in there. And then, so that's what's weird about us. So you always say you can self-identify as rural, and we're that category. If you go east, over the next, probably 30-35 miles, there's about 300,000-400,000 people. And if you go west, there's about every 25 miles, there's another little bitty small town just dotted across the landscape. So we're kind of right on the cusp of what most people would consider rural, what I grew up in. So we're right on the edge leading into that.
And the other unique thing about Coppers Cove, a lot of people tuning in might never have heard of it, but they've probably heard of Fort Hood, right?
Yeah. Fort Hood's here. So it's the largest military installation by land, not people necessarily, but there's a ton of land here. And so that drives the economy. I mean, just like most other military installations, the local economy is driven by Fort Hood, both with people and work, and all of that happens kind of it's the hub for economic activity in a large sense. So that's where most of our people come from. I mean, there's some native, like, for example, I think there's one other family in our church that's only lived in Texas besides my wife and I. And so most everyone has been transplanted at some point, whether they decided to stay after they got out of the army or not. But most everyone, we're the odd people that have only lived in Texas. And so it was a different lifestyle. I didn't grow up around the military, so we had to learn the language quickly. And I still don't know all the acronyms, but I've clued in to know when to laugh if the conversation's happening. But yeah, so that's kind of our deal. It's a very transient because of that. A lot of people will use the example of it's kind of like a college town as far as people coming and going from the church. The only difference I would add into that is it's whole families that are leaving. So most of the time in a college town, the people that leave are going to be the younger singles, maybe young family, but usually it's the young single professional that's leaving. And for us, it's the entire family. So we feel that as a church and just even personally as a family, there's a connection at every relational level. So the kids lose friends and we lose friends. And so that's the only difference is it's kind of rips out a little differently once you go. And, it's been hard for our children. They've had to learn how to love people well, even as they're leaving. Mm. And we've had to learn how to explain how it's hard, but it can still be okay. So that was a challenging parenting struggle for a while, is how to explain that.
So Zach, you can chime here in a moment with any question you have, but I just want to, so how have you adjusted to this idea that you are discipling people for their future somewhere else, most likely?
Honestly, I don't think we've always done that well. Our goal is to just be efficient at discipleship. So try to gauge where people are when they get to us so that we can meet those needs appropriately. And for the first, 4 or 5 years of the church, most of the people we got were really new believers, which was great because we're seeing not transplanted believers, even from local places, but just new people seeking the Lord, or that they just found him and were trying to grow. And so we just try to be quick on that. And that's why I'd say efficiency is kind of the rule of my life, even with the bivocational, is it's not necessarily the way I've thought about it is it's not necessarily managing of time. It's measuring efficiency. And so if we're being efficient, then that's going to lead to more of a positive result, but it's not necessarily based on time. And so if we can find ways to be more efficient, then I think that's it. And we haven't always done that well. We've learned, we've had mistakes, and I had to repent of some of those, but at the same time, it's been to see people and then stay connected online and have them flourish and see them impacting somewhere else, or just getting connected with another church and saying, you know, which is the beauty of Acts 29, because we have, there's a good chance anywhere these people move, whether it's a base or they're retiring and going home, there's another Acts 29 church that we can point them to and say, at least start there, because theologically, doctrinally, you're going to feel at home, but it's also going to look different because it's different in the culture. And so start there. And hopefully we've trained them enough to be able to hit the ground running wherever they find themselves in that season.
Wow. Yeah. That, I mean, that's awesome. Like just, you know, a church in a rural town having that kind of impact across the United States or even globally, yeah, as you train people and have these gospel goodbyes. You mentioned being bivocational, which I am too. So I have so much I want to hear, yeah, about that. But being a school, yeah, teacher, like that decision to be bivocational, mm-hmm, is it out of necessity, desire, missional? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, it's a little of all, honestly. Primarily, it was out of just a necessity, more of a practicality. The school, I have a good paying job that we can live on. And so that just naturally allowed the church to have less of a burden to support us. And then, I mean, I'll be honest, there's plenty of times where I've told Lindsay that I wish I could be full-time and I'm ready. And it's like, but at other times, I mean, it's just not practical for us right now as a church. And I always felt weird, honestly, if I would be the one making all the money and we've got other people that are serving that could be paid. So we pay, all of our staff is part-time. So everyone, mm-hmm, we have on staff is a bivocational, some sort of role. And so we pay everyone a little bit that serves in those staff leading roles. My thing was that when the church needs a full-time non-bivocational pastor, we'll be able to afford it without an undue burden on the budget. And so far we haven't got there. So if all else fails in 11 years, when I can retire from teaching, then I'll just graduate. I'll retire into full-time ministry, if that's a way to awesome. Say that. So, but yeah, it does create a different connection. Like you being bivocational, understand this too, that you get a different connection with the people in your church because you work every day. So you understand that call to live a gospel light in the workplace because you have to do it too. And, but it also creates different connections within the community, and especially teaching, you know, the school that we met at a school for, all until I guess last November. So 6.5, 7.5 years, we're in a school, and that was the school that I worked at. So I was in that building actually 7 days a week for about 6 years till David, you know, lovingly rebuked me and said, "Why are you setting up on Saturday? Give yourself a break." And so
I'm so proud that you listened to me. I mean,
I did. Yeah. And it was great. It was great for the season that we did.
He gave you a building, so now you don't even have to set up.
Yeah, there you go. See, you should have come around sooner. I mean, that's all that is. But yeah, it's been good. It has its challenges. But like the summer. So I'm now in summer right now. Typically, I would be, you know, it's 2 o'clock here. So I would be in the middle of fourth grade PE right now. But so the summers, I have that time off. I try not to jump into total full time, just because it still allows us some rest just built in. Like this year is the first year I can actually have office hours because we have a building. And so I'm trying to figure out what does that look like, you know, over the summer to actually be up here working in the office, stuff like that. So it still offers, I think, more benefits than deterrence. Unless I'm being selfish. And those are the moments where I'm like, if I could just be full time. So.
Man, Kyle, I got 1,000 questions out of pop in my head. Like one is you're bivocational, you got a high, yeah, turnover. And what do you do for like elders?
That was the long running question and at one point we were actually, I guess it was in the Long Beach, that last Pastor Wives retreat in Long Beach. And I ran into Bob Thune and I asked him, I was like, so do I train the people that I have, even though they're going to leave or not, or do I wait until someone's going to be there? And he very wisely just said, you train who you have who feel qualified. If they leave, then you've equipped them in that manner too. And so we started working through that. We had a couple of guys that came and then have left. But we actually just installed two other elders in the last year. In fact, our first elder meeting with all three of us was the meeting when we had to decide what we were going to do because the school was shutting down because of COVID last year. So that was our first elders meeting as three elders. So we haven't had a chance to be normal elder team. So we've kind of led through crisis, but we've also been shielded from a lot of the problems that other places have COVID-wide too, if we're honest. So yeah, we finally trained and grew those guys, and the Lord had brought them both. And one of them is a retired soldier. So he helps navigate that life for us. And so he's been a huge benefit as well. But both of them are just great guys that the Lord brought and then called into that office. So it was definitely a fulfillment of a need and a blessing at the same time.
Side note, it almost seems like every time we bring on a new elder, there's a new crisis that comes, yeah, sort of like to baptize them by fire. And mm-hmm. If I documented it, I would guess that happens almost all the time. So yeah. Nothing on the extreme of COVID, but boy, that's I'm so glad that you got two elders. So the other guy, one guy's retired. The other guy, does he look like he's going to be stationed there for a while?
Yeah. He's here. He's not military. He's actually a firefighter on the edge of Austin in a town called Georgetown. So he worked. I always give him a hard time because, you know, if you know any firefighters, they get they've got the other good schedule, you know, 24 on, 48 off. So, but no, they came and they moved in the area and just got connected and just great friends now and just solid people. So we're definitely blessed to have the elders that we do. And I mean, it seems like every month or so, another situation comes up that I just find myself saying, I just got to thank y'all. Because I don't know how I'd handle this by myself, you know? And so it's just definitely, but I feel like that's ministry too. You know, every new adventure creates a new attack on the progress. And so I think the elders are just maybe a heightened version of that. Cause you want to attack the leaders when that comes.
Yeah. What was it that attracted you to Acts 29 initially?
Honestly, it's somewhat the bivocational idea is at that point, luckily I was wise enough to know I couldn't do it on my own. And so I started looking at networks, and at that point, of the ones that I found that I could agree with theologically, no one, Acts 29 was the only one that didn't require you to go do their residency somewhere else. And we were like, no, we're here. We know where we need to be. We just need a partnership. We need that connection, that network. I don't need to go somewhere to be trained. I need support where we are because this is where we're going to be. We didn't have to find a city. We knew. Yeah. And so Acts 29 offered that. And I applied. And that was back in that was still pre-crazy transition, not as far back as you would go. But I applied and I had no idea that there was an Acts 29 church in Killeen, you know, 20 minutes from here. So, And that pastor is Dave McMurray, who now is just a great friend to me, mentor, you know, through our assessment process, we got connected with them. He was one of my assessors. I do like to say, I think we hold the record for the longest candidate phase in Acts 29 history is about 3.5 years. And part of that was everyone kept moving before we could get our core group. We'd get to the number. And then people would move. And so we'd have to start over. And so it got to one point where I talked to, it was Tyler Powell at the time doing all that still. And I was like, can we be considered Europe? That has, cause it's harder to build right now. Like, but that was just me being impatient. But we finally had that stable number, but Dave was, he's been a huge benefit to us. We preach some of the same sermons every now and then. He's that guy that I can talk to that is just solid here, local, you know, and I had no clue.
I appreciate the fact when I visited you, he drove over and we had breakfast together and you tried to sell me on breakfast burritos or whatever you.
Breakfast tacos.
Breakfast. Yeah. That's just like, it's not a thing.
maybe see, sometimes there's joys that you don't get to experience because you're kind of afraid to try new things. And so,
I ate one.
Well, you ordered it, but then I think you took the tortilla off and it turned into a bowl. So a breakfast bowl is not the same as a breakfast taco. It doesn't count that it one time touched tortillas. Yeah. You have to eat it together, but you know, hey, when you come back next time, we'll just keep putting them in front of you. And eventually you'll taste and see.
And we have them in North Carolina, so it might just be a you thing, David. I don't know. Yeah. Why do you have breakfast tacos?
It's probably an old thing. Like, you know, I grew up on oatmeal and cream of wheat and, you know, things that people never hear of. But hey, Johnny Pollock from Republic of Ireland has sent in a question here. What have been some of the ways that God has surprised you in planting in a rural context? So surprises.
I think some of the surprises would be just because I grew up in a rural town. I mean, it was a small town. I was in the same school. I grew up in the exact opposite environment in some ways that we're planting now, because I've got some of the friends that I still talk to that I've known for now almost 42 years. And so that was, I knew some of that surprising the rule, but really just the ways you see, I think what surprised me the most is seeing the growth that can happen in such a quick time and how community can happen, but it doesn't have to be defined how you would define it. And so I think rural people are resilient because they create relationships because there's nothing else that they have. And I think just seeing how the gospel has kind of shaped those communities is probably been the biggest surprise, how on some level, how easy it was. And I say that knowing that it's not easy in the sense of you just happen, but easy in the sense of it's already there in the framework. You just kind of have to shift and show what's the benefit in a gospel way. You're already doing it. You're already knowing each other. You know everyone's business. You already know what's happening in each other's lives, but how do you do it with a purpose for a missional understanding? I think seeing how people could adapt to that was a surprise. But then also, honestly, and it's funny that Johnny would be the one to ask that, is what I think one of the biggest surprises I never expected was the connections with other rural pastors that can still happen now, you know, technologically. And some of that, like, you know, Rob Scuthern, that you'll get to meet, you know, in a few months, Dave, in the UK. You'll get to be with him. But
I'm going to really meet him.
he's an amazing friend. And so I think that's a surprise. Like, what is a random guy, PE teacher in, you know, Central Texas doing connecting with a rural guy in the, you know, middle of the UK, and but then all the common experiences that he has that we have, and it's just great. Like, I talk to him probably more than any other pastor that I know, oddly enough. And I think that's a huge surprise that, man, you know, we're both rural. He's more rural than we are. Like, we identify as rural. He's just rural. Like, you don't have to question it, but, and he's just been a great benefit to that. And our churches are, we support him and Peak Trinity, and it's just been a blessing. And so I think that's that international connection, which happens because of Acts 29, but man, now it's developed into a friendship and just a loving relationship. It's just great. So that's probably the biggest thing. I never would have thought that.
That's
so
great.
By the way,
if you're listening to this live and you want to shoot in a question in the chat, we'd love to respond to it. And something that Kyle just mentioned, we randomly created global partners between U.S. rural churches and other churches, but now we're intentionally doing that. And if you're a rural church and you're looking to develop a partnership, you can contact Scott Prentice through Acts 29. And we've got an intentional program now, just because there's such shared joys and struggles in the rural context around the globe. That's really, really good.
Yeah. That was part of ours, is we wanted to be a church planting church, but in our context, in all likelihood, we're probably not going to have someone that we raise up, train and send out. there's just, that's going to be a smaller option of that. We lose about 33% of our people every year.
And again, that's the transient. Of Fort Hood and
yeah, that's the Army. Yeah. Yep. But, and so our idea was, if we want to be church planting, then we're going to have to try to support other people financially, which we're a small church, when I have a lot of finances. And so we wanted to have strategic partnerships with people. And we just happened to run into Rob at the global gathering, that first global gathering that we had. And I mean, he's a former officer in the British Army. They're rural. I mean, it's like his experiences in life is, it's like our people look at him and think, that's me on some level. I mean, we've got people that were deployed at the same time that he was deployed. Like, so there's a lot of shared connection. And so that was just a providential relationship. But that's the only way we would ever be a church planting church, is support someone, because we're not really going to send anyone out. Not that we don't want to, it's just on unlikelihood we're not going to be able to do that.
Hey Kyle, you mentioned earlier talking about efficiency in bivocational. Yeah. Man, I'd love to hear more about that, doing that myself. Like, how do you find that balance and between all that you do?
Oh man, I would like to say that I've got it really good, but that's why I have to understand measure efficiency. I have to plan out a little more ahead. Like if we're talking sermon wise prep, I have to know a little further. I don't always do that well. But the way I've done it in my life, just for us and our family, is I do a lot of my sermon, study time during my off period at school. So I have a conference period, so I'll do a lot of the study there. Or I do it late in the evenings. I tend to be more of a late night person. So, the kids will go to bed and then I'll study and do some of that. So, that's kind of the best way I've had. And then I just have a ton of reminders on my phone that remind me of things that I will forget about. And I mean, you know, it's always like, oh, I'll pray for you. And then you always forget to pray. I've had to find a bunch of ways to just remind myself. So I use some of that. I mean, some of it is just apps that help me remind. But that's where the efficiency comes in, is, hey, I know if I need to do this and I have time, then I do it then. That way I don't have to worry about, oh, because I don't know what's going to happen during the day. I might, you know, we might have something where I get called in and have to do something different for the day, and then my schedule changes. I can't rely on what was set. So that's, I think the efficiency for me is, when I'm doing something, don't waste that time, which is really hard with technology, because sometimes I just want to turn my mind off and do mindless things, and that's just lazy. But yeah, that's what I mean when efficient is, when I have a second, I need to use it. And not that I'm a workaholic. We still have fun. We still play. We go on walks
every day. Almost, you post on Facebook every day. I walk with Lindsay.
Yeah. Yeah. We like, that's our time just to chat. And you know, the kids, we try to get the kids to come, but they're old enough to where we give them an option now. Sometimes they need to run. But that's kind of our downtime. We both get to talk. She's a director of preschool, and so she leads a lot as well. And as y'all too know, leadership is burdensome at times. And so that's a good conversation. But yeah, efficiency, I just plan. I try to plan the best I can forward. So do what?
Still taking a day off?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, now that we don't have to set up, yeah. You know, I do. I usually end up, and you know, this kind of freaks a lot of pastors out. I finish my sermons on Saturday night is when I write my final outline to preach from. But a lot of that is not because I haven't worked on it. It's just that's what's helped me kind of still. That's that my one final work through. It's kind of Saturday night. Everyone's in bed. I'll drink some coffee and work on it. And so, typically it's all evening for church work. And then that flips in the summers. I'll do most of my church work in the morning, in the summers, and then the afternoon and evenings are total family time for the most part, or random things like mowing. I'll throw in a podcast and mow the church. Now I got to mow the churchyard. So,
and I love your side. You have a little side hobby there, working with wood.
Yeah.
Kyle is his garage has as much sawdust in it as it's pretty amazing. Sure. The stuff you've made. I've seen some of it.
Yeah, that's another thing too, is I haven't been doing hardly any of that, because I just kind of, that was my rest. I turn my mind off and just build some furniture, and that's kind of gone out lately. I've just been tired. We moved houses, and so, you know, moving is kind of crazy, and so house projects took over furniture projects, and so there's not so much sawdust in my garage as just junk still that I need. That's one of my summer projects, is let's clean the garage. But that's also being able to say no. And so, like, seminary, I was going to Covenant Seminary in St. Louis, just online stuff. And we were about to preach Romans, and I couldn't preach Romans what I thought would be a good idea, whether that was good or not. You know, you can go listen and see how I handled that. And seminary. And so seminary had to go. Like, that, I have to figure out what things need to be there and what things need to be cut out. And I don't always make the right choice immediately. You know, like the setup, it seemed great on Saturdays. And then David comes in, he's like, why are you even doing that? And I was like, that was where it was easier to get people to come, because our church is kind of in the middle of nowhere, and people didn't want to come early on Sunday and then sit around. But then we just switched it and it worked. So it was great. So, you know,
I'll help you get efficient. So invite me to a small town. We'll work on efficiency.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. We can do it over breakfast with a taco.
Oh, there we go. And you can consider going to Grimke Seminary. Is that where you're going, Zach? I see you got that T-shirt on.
Yeah, Lord willing, to graduate in December. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we got to wrap this up here. I could talk all day, as you guys know. Kyle, any closing sort of words of wisdom or things you'd want people listening to hear?
And I don't know if it's words of wisdom. I just know the struggle with I'm an odd church planter in the sense that I'm full-time bivocational. So I work full-time and pastor. We're rural. And then I'm also a type B personality, which doesn't really exist in the church planting world a lot of places. And so my tendency is to sit back in the room. And I think, so that's one thing I've learned, that I don't need to do that, you know, because in some sense that's being who I am, but in some sense that's not accomplishing what I need to accomplish. But I think with that is, in a world where technology is so easily available, and that's kind of the struggle with being in a network like S29, is we have some tremendous brothers that can preach. And so it's easy to look somewhere else and think, you know, they've got to figure it out. If I was there, then it would be easier, rather than just resting where I am in this random rural transient context of Central Texas. And so I think that's the way I've said it to our people, because a lot of people that are from other places, Central Texas is not a draw for military base that they want to be at. And so the way I've said it to our people is that everyone always says the grass is always greener, but a lot of times you get there and you find out it's just weeds. And so, I think that's kind of my thing, is, man, I could be somewhere else, but this is where the Lord's called me. So I need to work hard here and not worry about comparing to the resources or the ways that anything else happens, because, you know, that's not where I've been called to. So I think that would be, just settle where you are and plant deep roots and he'll take care of the rest.
Well, Kyle, you're doing good work there. And I think God, before the foundation of the world, decided that he needed a type B personality guy to plant a church there in Copper's Cove that would primarily minister to transient military families for the glory of God and for the furtherance of the kingdom. And you seem to be a good fit there, man. So attaboy, I'm proud of you. And thanks for this time. And I'm sure if anybody wants to follow up with you, you'd love to interact with them. Because you are a gym teacher and you have some time, right?
That's true. Well, I'm on summer break now. So, you know, I am. I mean, I've always said, you know, a PE teacher, the way I've talked to my other elders, the PE teacher is like the volunteer firefighter. They can probably do the job, but everyone expects the other person to do it. So that's how I am with teachers. Like, yeah, you could probably teach, but you're PE. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, thanks, man. And I hope this edition of Gospel Nobodies has been encouragement to you. Certainly appreciate Kyle Black from Copper's Cove, the Watershed Church, and good to have Zach Mason here joining us too from the Grove Church. So God bless, and See you next time.
Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, thank y'all. It was fun.